Hello, you wrestling fanatics, and welcome to another episode of Reach Wrestling. I am your host, Alan Reed, and today I'll be reviewing the February 17th edition of AEW Dynamite. So the night starts off with Hangman Adam Page and Matt Hardy versus the Hybrid 2. Hybrid 2 takes the fight to Hangman early on into the match. Hangman then quickly gains the offense on Hybrid 2. A blind tag by Evans from Hybrid 2 to Angelico, and he drives Matt Hardy to the corner. Evan holds Matt Hardy in his corner, pushes him to the top rope. Angelico goes for a pin and Matt Hardy kicks out. And before I keep going, personally, I feel like Hybrid 2 is a pretty good tag team, great chemistry. Both of them always have insane little tricks up their sleeve and very athletic. So it's, again, it's one of the teams I always talk about that I feel like should get a little more push, but we will see how that will keep going throughout the weeks coming. So then we have Matt Hardy. He does a side effect on Evans, giving Matt Hardy finally a breather because Evans had the offense on Matt Hardy for quite a while. Hangman takes out Jack Evans with a jump clothesline from the ropes. And Angelico jumps from the top rope. Hangman catches him with a powerbomb. Matt Hardy goes for a twist of fate. And Evan pushes Matt Hardy to Hangman Adam Page, knocking Hangman Adam Page to the steel railing. Evan does a pretty botched Phoenix roll. Like, he couldn't get a pretty good grip on it, but they played it off pretty well. They saved it. And then Hangman Adam Page does a double buckshot to the Hybrid 2. Matt Hardy does a twist of fate on Angelico. Hangman Adam Page and Matt Hardy win the match. And Angelico is seriously sold that twist of fate that Matt Hardy gave him. I mean, he just literally drove his body all the way up. He stood still and then he fell to the ring. I love it when these people can sell a move so good. So then Matt Hardy ends up grabbing the mic and he starts saying how Adam Page looks like $1 million and he will make a lot of money. And then Matt Hardy ends up saying that I'm also gonna be rich because I'm gonna be getting 30% of the money you make. And then Hangman Adam Page says, "Hey Matt, did you read the contract closely?" And then a mascot comes out and he's holding an AEW contract. Matt Hardy starts reading it and he says, "This isn't a contract, it's a match." So then he says that it'll be Matt Hardy versus Hangman Adam Page at Revolution. And if if Matt Hardy loses to Hangman, Hangman will get 100% of his money. So then Matt Hardy plays it off and says, "Okay, Hangman, you pulled one on me. That's cool." But then Matt Hardy had his own stipulation. He told Adam Page, "Okay, if you win, you get 100% of your money. But if I win, I'm gonna have all your earnings for the first half of 2021. And Hangman Adam Page, being the badass redneck that he is, he's like, "Okay, that's all good." They shake hands. So then the mascot, again, I don't know what the hell they called them, Jackson DeVille, whatever, he starts attacking Hangman Adam Page, and it's revealed that it's Isaiah Cassidy behind the mask. But then the Dark Order comes in and starts to wreak havoc on Matt Hardy and Isaiah. And as for the Dark Order, I mean, they really do have Hangman Adam Page back. I mean, I think Hangman Adam Page should join Dark Order because it just seems like they're in every corner that he's in. They're always very nice to him and everything. I mean, clearly, this is the family that Adam Page is looking for. But I don't know why he's wasting his time on Matt Hardy. Maybe he's just trying to prove to Matt Hardy that he's better than him. So it's one of those weird things happening. I just think he should just join Dark Order. There's nothing more to be said. But then Hangman Adam Page comes in with a buckshot lariat, and Matt Hardy dodges it. And he's lucky to dodge it because that one was coming full force. There's an interview with Santino and Ortiz backstage, and they say that it's about damn time that they get a tag team title shot. And then, of course, MGF comes in and starts talking about how Sammy Guevara crossed the line last week, as you all know, Sammy Guevara attacked MGF because MGF was recording Sammy Guevara. And again, MGF makes everything about himself. Of course he will. But then Chris Jericho says that we all know what MJF was trying to do, that he was trying to piss off Sammy Guevara to the point that he will leave the Inner Circle. And then Chris Jericho continues to say that Sammy Guevara's decision is stupid. Like, he is dead to him. Sammy Guevara is dead to Chris Jericho. So with that point being said from Chris Jericho, I came to a hypothesis saying, okay, so something tells me that Sammy is going to come back, obviously, unless there is some like actual like real life personal issues that he's dealing with, that there's been reports on that he might be suspended from AEW and Impact because he was supposed to appear in Impact Wrestling, but not anymore. So that's for another day. But something tells me that when Sammy Guevara comes back, he's going to have a match with Chris Jericho. So it'll be like a Sammy Guevara versus Chris Jericho match, and the winner will determine the leader of the inner circle. So I see that happening. I would love to see that happen, just to see Sammy Guevara win, and he's the leader of the inner circle, and then the hell he'll bring on MJF. I can already see that happening. So then we have Serena Deeb versus Riho for the women's championship. It's the first round match in the tournament. And before I say anything about this match, wow. I mean, it's so refreshing to see Riho come back after a huge, huge hiatus from AEW. It was like maybe like 4 months, maybe because of COVID. She just disappeared out of nowhere. So, and she was champion too, so she had to give it up. But every time I see Riho's smile, I mean, she could just brighten up your day. She has the most wonderful smile I've ever seen. I mean, bless her heart. So the match, it starts out with some mat wrestling. Serena Deeb, being that mat wrestler she is, she wrestles Riho all the way to the ground. An armbar from Serena Reed on Riho. Riho reverses to a pin, and Serena kicks out. Both women really do the test of strength. They lock hands, and Serena Deeb literally bends Riho all the way down to the mat. I never knew Riho was so flexible, to be honest with you. It doesn't look like it. So then Riho does a body press. She goes for a pin. Serena kicks out. Serena catapults Riho on the top rope. Serena Deeb pretty much has Riho on the ground in this match for the majority of the match. She does her best to keep Riho on the ground, as Riho loves to be a high-flying wrestler. So it's good that she's trying her best to her legs or her arms to make Riho not gain any offense to get to the top rope. Then Riho, out of nowhere, does a snapdragon on Serena. That shit came out of nowhere. It caught me off guard. I was like, holy shit. And I'll say one thing about the crowd. I mean, they were popping for this match, because, brand new, this was just like the beginning of the match, and the crowd, even though it was like a little bit of people, they were popping for this match. And I, again, imagine if it was a full arena full of fans. I mean, this match got a huge pop. Riho does a head scissor on Serena. She goes for a pin, and Serena kicks out. And then finally, from this point on, Riho gets some sort of momentum going on Serena Deeb. Riho goes to the top rope, dives to Serena. Serena rolls over and works on Riho's leg. So that momentum died out fairly, not too quick, but not too short either. Serena does a dragon screw on Riho's arm, a move you don't normally see anywhere, really. It's one of those moves you really see more in the independent scene, but her coming from NWA and her being the NWA Women's Champion, it was a nice move to see. They should actually use the dragon screw a lot more, to be honest. Then Serena does a swinging net breaker. Riho kicks out of a pin. And then Riho trips Serena to the middle rope, and she does a, you know, quote-unquote 619 on Serena. Even Jim Ross said it with a question mark, really. He's like, 619, I guess? Riho does a diving foot stomp to Serena Deeb's back. Riho then dives, does another dive, goes for a pin. Serena kicks out. And from this point on, this match, incredible. These two women, as I knew that once I saw the match card, it was going to be an incredible match, because these two women are putting it on the line. They want the women's championship, and plus, technically, it is Rio's championship. She never lost it. She had to just relinquish it because of COVID last year, so she never really did lose it, technically. So then Serena D powerbombs Riho, and then does a stretch muffler ouch, that's a very painful move, to be honest. But then Riho rolls Serena Deeb over and is so close to a three count, so close, so like 2 milliseconds from a three count. Riho does again, goes again to the top rope. Serena kicks Riho in the sternum, and then both women do an insane style of pinfalls in the ring. They start twirling around, rolling around, flipping around, trying to pin each other with these crazy ways to pin each other. Riho reverses one of Serena Deeb's pins and gets the win. So now Riho gets to move on the tournament. And like I said, insane match. Both women stole the show here. It was incredible match. Like I said, when I saw that match card, Serena Deeb versus Riho, I knew these two women were gonna be insane. And I'm glad they were actually gave a match worth it. And then from that point on, even Jim Ross says, hey, good luck boys, because these two women just stole the show. So God knows what all the guys are gonna do. I mean, Jim Ross saying that, you know it's legit. So then we have freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy versus Luther. Okay, random match. But Luther quickly knocks out Orange Cassidy. Let me say, every time someone attacks Orange Cassidy sells those attacks so good. He literally just lays down like he's dead, knocked out. I mean, I love seeing, to be honest, I kind of love seeing Orange Cassidy knocked out in the ring because it's funny. Luther swings Cassidy around by his shirt, but then over Orange Cassidy powerbombs Luther too from the ring corner to the floor. Orange Cassidy does an orange punch and he gets the win. Orange Cassidy is victorious. It was a fast match, really. There was nothing there, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. It was more of like to show us that Orange Cassidy is back in the ring. And that's it, really. We move on to Team Taz. They make their way to the ring. And now this is the first time we've seen Team Taz inside an AEW ring after being suspended for 2 weeks, I believe, that they were suspended, and they were always hanging out in the parking lot doing their interviews from the Titantron. So then Taz starts by saying that he's been hearing that Sting is going to call out Team Taz, and then Taz starts taunting Sting and calls Sting out, says that there's only three of them, you can come out, nothing's gonna happen. And Sting comes out being a badass, and to be honest, his entrance is so dramatic, it's so Game of Thrones, it's so different from what I normally would have said a Sting having an entrance would, with the whole snow thing and the dramatic Game of Thrones music. I mean, it's cool. Taz then says that Sting stepping into the ring is the worst decision he's ever made. And Taz looks at Sting's bat and he says, yeah, of course you need the bat. You've been needing that bat for years. And then the crowd gets a pop like, oh, damn. Like, because it is kind of true, because when Sting was in WCW, he kind of needed the bat always to kind of back him up. So Taz hit him in the gut right there. And then Sting ends up punching Brian Cage. Yes, this is the first time we've seen Sting throw a punch since leaving WWE. And that was 2 years ago. Yes, he threw a punch to one of the strongest people in AEW, Brian Cage. But of course, Brian Cage overpowers him and he boots Sting's middle section, his sternum, his stomach, whatever you want to call it. So then Brian Cage powerbombs Sting in the center of the ring. And when I saw the powerbomb and saw how stiff Sting was, I was wondering how much of it was approved by Sting, because he technically can't wrestle that much due to his neck, his neck injuries and his surgery. So let's be real. I mean, Sting and Brian Cage were obviously overpower Sting, because Brian Cage is a fucking beast. This guy's arms are the size of my body, probably. This guy is massive. So with Sting, I'm curious, because he is going to be in a street fight at Revolution between Brian Cage and Ricky Starks, and there are reports saying that they're going to like wrestle around him. Like, I mean, he's going to get a few shots in, he's going to have a few spots, but not too many spots. So I'm curious, maybe this was just like kind of like Sting maybe telling Brian Cage like, hey, powerbomb me in the ring and let me see how I feel, so then I know what to do, what to expect, or what to do at Revolution. So it's one of those things that made me think of how much of this was actually approved by Sting. We have Eddie Kingston backstage, a very determined Eddie Kingston, to be honest. He says that he wants the match that he's going to have for this AEW Dynamite, a six-man tag match. And he says that Lance Archer has been bothering him. Ray Phoenix is a waste of space. I mean, poor guy, he never gets anything. But I mean, Ray Phoenix is not a waste of space. I'll say that. And then he finishes by saying, John Moxley, he's the demon that he needs to get rid of. He can't get rid of John Moxley with drinking, with pills, or with women. He needs to end John Moxley. Very determined in Kingston. And then we have probably the most out there, no one expected segment of AEW. We have Kenny Omega inside a classroom full of kids, and he's acting all nice. And he has the Young Bucks book in front of him, and then the kids start asking questions about the Young Bucks, and Kenny starts answering them. And then one kid asks if the Young Bucks are in love, and Kenny says yes, they're in love. Look at them, they're together, they are in love. So that was a little funny. And then Kenny Omega ends up reading a part of the Young Bucks book, and then Don Callis tells him that they have to go. They have all the business to attend to. And this was such a random segment. I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, it's so Kenny Omega's new character. It's so like, I don't give a fuck. I'm the AEW champion. I'm probably one of the biggest wrestlers that came from New Japan Wrestling. I go to Impact Wrestling. Now, Impact Wrestling is having better views because of me. So I can do whatever the fuck I want. And I mean, a kid segment, I mean, fuck it, go for it. Next week it might be a high school thing, you know, for all we know. So then we have the Young Bucks versus Santino and Ortiz for the tag team championship. Santana goes for an armbar on Nick Jackson and quickly tags in Ortiz. Mac Jackson gets tagged in and hip tosses Santana and Ortiz. He starts taking on both of them. But then Ortiz and Santana do a backbreaker on Nick Jackson. MJF ends up getting banned from ringside for literally just saying something when he got on the corner of the ring. But then the entire inner circle gets banned from ringside. So now Santana and Ortiz are fucked. So then Santana works on Nick Jackson. He body slams him in his corner. Nick Jackson super kicks Ortiz. Mac Jackson takes on both Santana and Ortiz before Ortiz kicks the back of his head. Mac Jackson does a twisted stunner on Ortiz, goes for a pin. Ortiz kicks out. Ortiz superplexes Nick Jackson from the top rope, but then Ortiz also has Nick Jackson in some weird modified headlock that I don't even know what to call it, but it was just a modified headlock. That's what I'm going to call it, modified headlock. It was a weird one. And then Matt Jackson drops the elbow on Ortiz's chest, breaking up the modified headlock submission that I'm so going to call it if I see it again. Matt Jackson has Santana on his shoulder, and then the Young Bucks does a doomsday device on Ortiz, a little, you know, Legion of Doom homage there. Young Bucks then throw Santana to the corner, kick to the back of his head, goes for a pin. Ortiz breaks up the count. Then Santana and Ortiz does a street sweeper on Nick Jackson. Matt Jackson breaks up the count. That one was so close. I honestly thought that Santana and Ortiz were actually going to be champions, because they deserve it. They're one of the best tag teams they have right now, probably maybe a little bit underestimated, maybe when you have the Young Bucks and FTR and stuff like that. I feel like Santana and Ortiz are a little bit underestimated, but hey, this really showed that they can hang out with the best tag teams, and they can do their thing. So then Ortiz and Santana powerbomb Matt Jackson over the railing to the concrete. Nick Jackson does a inside cradle and wins the match. So the Young Bucks retain the titles. Personally, I was kind of sad. I actually wanted Santana and Ortiz to win. But I mean, the Young Bucks are not going to give up their titles right now. I mean, They're too hot. They're too much in a winning streak, so they're not gonna give it up. So then Inner Circle comes out and starts attacking the Young Bucks, and then we see Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers and Don Callis backstage watching their quote unquote best friends, which are the Young Bucks, getting basically killed by the Inner Circle. And then you see Kenny contemplating, like, hey, should we go out there? And then you see Don Callis telling Kenny, like, no, we shouldn't go out there, this is not our business, blah blah. But then the Good Brothers end up coming out, and they slowly come in, and they just literally tell the Inner Circle to leave. They don't really do anything to help, really. They just slowly make the way to ring, hey, can you leave please, boom. And then Jericho ends up going to where the Young Bucks father is, because the Young Bucks family was there, the parents were there. So then Jericho ends up taunting the Young Bucks father, and then the father ends up pushing Jericho back, and then the Inner Circle just loses it. It's like, calling him, what are you doing, old man? You can't handle this, blah blah. I personally love when they incorporate like real life family into these storylines. It just makes it more personal and more better, really, because it's like, you know, in the 90s when Owen Hart and Bret Hart were wrestling, were hating each other, but then they involved the entire family, and you see Stu Hart besides the ring trying to be like the middleman in this. So I always love it when they bring in a real life family member into these storylines. So then we move on to probably the nicest segment of the night. We have Brandi Rhodes that said, she said she's going to reveal the sex of her baby, her actual real life baby, because she is pregnant. Yes, Brandi Rhodes and Cody Rhodes are going to be parents. So then she ends up coming out, well, her and Cody Rhodes ends up coming out, and then fireworks start coming out, and the fireworks are pink, so it's a girl. I mean, I love that reveal. I mean, Cody Rhodes didn't even know. He wanted to know in real life, in person, on live TV, and that's actually really nice. That says a lot about Cody Rhodes and how much wrestling is part of his family. It's kind of like we're part of his family. So it was a nice reveal, and I mean, congratulations to both Cody Rhodes and Brandi Rhodes. I mean, they're gonna be great parents, and that little girl is gonna grow up to be a badass wrestler, I bet. So then we have another tag team match. We have FTR versus Matt and Mike Sydal, the Sydal brothers. So then FTR is back after a 2-week suspension because quote unquote Jungle Boy told on them about Marco Stunt being kidnapped. So more on that later. So then Cash Wheeler quickly slams Mike Sydal. Dax Harwood gives Mike a hell of a chop to the chest. I mean, that was an echoing shot. Matt Sydal gets tagged in and brings that dragon game. I call that dragon game being the speed in the ring. That guy's like all over the place. It's almost like the camera can barely catch him because he's just flying and going super fast in the ring, which is something I like about Matt Sydal. He's almost like it's like gravity doesn't revolve around him. You know, he's just like boom, 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 boom. It's really, really cool to see. Then a Mike Sydal works on Dax Harbor in the corner. Cash Wheeler backslams Mike, sending him flipping back to the top rope. Dax Harwood has Mike Sydal in a headlock. And then from here on, again, I'm going to talk more about Matt Sydal. He has this, like, you know, the dragon speed, but he also has like this karate like style in the ring where he just uses his legs and his arms. It's cool. So then Mike Sydal gets on the top rope and then moonsaults to both FTR members. Cash uppercuts Matt when he gets between the ropes. A little bit of a Terry Senior there, you know, as he was in the crowd. Then Dax powerbombs Matt, goes for a pin, and then Mike breaks up the count. Matt Sydal takes out FTR from the top rope. Then Matt Sydal gets back to the top rope, and Dax trips Matt. And then FTR does their finisher. FTR gets the win. And I'm not going to lie, Sydal brothers, again, they have a very interesting way of reversing a lot of moves. Like, it's exciting to watch. Like, the way they come up with ways to, like, you have them in a headlock or in an armbar or a stretch muffler or whatever submission move, or any move in general. and they just find a way to literally like flip back and reverse it. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, these people, there's like no gravity for these two guys. These two guys are just doing it. And then after the match, Dax Harwood ends up grabbing a pair of scissors and they want to cut Matt Sydal's hair, but then the lights go out. And then we see a video of Luchasaurus in the background, or the shadow of Luchasaurus in the background, and we see the mask that FTR cut the horns from, and it's on the floor. So then we see Jungle Express coming out, and then we see that Luchasaurus has a new mask, and then Jungle Express takes out FTR. So clearly this feud is gonna keep going for quite a while. I mean, it should probably end in like a, I don't know, like FTR versus Jungle Express. If FTR wins, Luchasaurus has to like unmask himself or whatever. But no, that'd be too stupid. I mean, they should not do that at all. But it was just a thought. So we move on to a John Moxley segment again. John Moxley's segment. He's outside somewhere in the construction area, whatever, beat up place around Davey's place. And he says how Eddie Kingston has a problem with everyone. Everyone apparently pisses him off, and it's annoying because apparently you can't say no to Eddie Kingston because the guy just goes off on you. And he says how John Moxley is the only person that cares about Eddie Kingston, that no one else cares about him. But John Moxley is also determined to get his AEW championship back from Kenny Omega after he defeats Kenta in New Japan Wrestling. Which personally, I'm looking extremely forward to seeing John Moxley versus Kenta in New Japan, because that is going to be insane of a match. Like, oh my God, bro, I'm going to grab my popcorn, my chips, my Mountain Dew, because that match, hell, it can go on for one hour, making an Iron Man match, because those two are going to destroy each other, and I honestly cannot wait. So then we move on to the main event of the night. We have Eddie Kingston with The Butcher and the Blade versus John Moxley, Lance Archer, and Rey Fénix. Everyone quickly gets in the ring and all hell breaks loose. Every person chooses someone they want to beat up, and they go all over the place. The Butcher rams Lance Archer to the steel railings. Eddie and John Moxley fight by the entrance ramp. Butcher and Blade toss John Moxley to the railings. There was a lot of railing tosses today. It was like their favorite weapon today for some reason. The Butcher ends up working on Moxley in his corner. The Blade power slams Moxley, goes for a pin. John Moxley kicks out. Moxley counters into a neck break on the Blade. Lance Archer gets tagged in and tosses the Blade across the ring like a toy. Lance gets on top of the rope. He does the whole, he walks on top of the rope, jumps to the Blade. You know, a little Undertaker old school homage, I would call it. The Butcher works on Lance Archer in his corner. This man, the Butcher, I don't know what it is about tonight, about that night in AEW, but he only kept his opponents in his corner where his other tag team partners were. So it was kind of like, hey, you know, you have like three other corners, and you have like two other corners that have no one there, so you can always use those corners instead of just having your opponent corner. But I mean, hey, it's better to have him corner than to have him loose, right? So then Eddie Kingston finally gets tagged in into the match, which it was his first tag of the match. He gives Lance Archer a hard chop to the chest. The Butcher then gets tagged back in by Eddie Kingston. Lance grabs Butcher and Eddie by the neck and headbutts the Blade as it comes charging in. Lance runs the ropes and takes out both Butcher and Eddie. And then Rey Fénix gets tagged in finally, because I feel like this guy is my MVP. He puts the Butcher to the top rope, gets to the top rope, kicks Butcher, and arm drags Eddie Kingston. It was a hell of a combo right there. I mean, only Rey Fénix can do this type of move. Rey then jumps over the top rope to take out the Blade. Rey Fénix gets on the top rope again, and he does a huge frog splash to the Butcher, like a huge frog splash. I mean, this guy almost made it to the roof of Daly's place. It was insane. And Eddie Kingston comes in and slams Rey Fénix down, and that kind of causes Rey Fénix to lose his momentum. So then Butcher does a diving crossbody to Lance Archer. John Moxley German suplexes the Butcher. And then at this point on, all the men in the ring are down. Every single person has done something to each other, and they're just slowly crawling around the ring. But Butcher and Rey Fénix are the ones to get up first, and then they go out of the ring. And then John Moxley and Eddie are tagged in, and they have an intense stare down before trading hands. And quite frankly, these two men, they respect each other. They might not like each other. They might actually not like each other, but there is that respect there. Like, both men know that each other, that each one of them is great, the great wrestlers. Then Rey Fénix comes in and gets a super kick in to Eddie Kingston. Lance Archer does a pounce. John Moxley locks in the Bulldog on Eddie Kingston. Butcher and the Blade break it up. Lance Archer grabs Rey and chokes, and he grabs Rey by the neck. He was giving him an idea. He was telling him to come to him. And he chokeslam Rey Fénix to the Butcher and the Blade outside. So that was a very interesting interesting tag team move for Lance Archer. So then John Moxley and Eddie Kingston are alone in the ring again. John Moxley does his finisher for the win. So he easily pinned Eddie Kingston. It's almost like Eddie Kingston didn't even try. So then your winners are John Moxley, Lance Archer, and Rey Fénix. And sadly, I was disappointed in Rey Fénix because he didn't really do that much. He did a huge frog splash, but again, I keep wanting more from him. Maybe he just teasing us with more, but man. And as for Eddie Kingston, I mean, man, this guy, he's been on a losing streak. Is he ever going to catch a break? Is he ever going to like break through and win one of these people that he hates? Like, they're just literally having him lose, and it's like, oh, like I literally want Eddie Kingston to win something. So then the Good Brothers end up coming out and they attack John Moxley. And then Kenny Omega's music pops up and he starts coming out. And he has an interesting style for Dynamite. I mean, a little puffy white shirt, some skinny blue jeans, and then some very shiny boots that I don't know if they're wrestling boots or boots to go out. But it's a very interesting attire that Kenny Omega decides to wear now with him being this whole champion. And then Kenny starts saying to John Moxley that he has a contract from Tony Khan, the owner of AEW. And Kenny says that John can have his rematch at Revolution. And Kenny Omega says that he is going to give him his damn match at Revolution. But Kenny Omega picks the stipulation. And let me tell you, before I say the name of the stipulation, the name is incredible. I feel like it's so 90s. Like, I was literally like, what the fuck? So the name of the match that Kenny Omega and John Moxley are going to have at Revolution is an exploding barbed wire death match. What the fuck is that? Okay. So then Kenny Omega attacks John Moxley. And Kenny is one pissed off son of a bitch right now. I mean, this guy wants to literally, he said he wants to break John Moxley's neck. He wants to burn him alive, bury him alive, whatever it takes. So that's why they're going to have an exploding barbed wire death match. Now, I want to talk about that barbed wire death match. What the fuck is that? Like, is it going to have like, is every weapon going to be like exploding, or is the ring ropes going to be barbed wire? And every time you get tossed into them, they're going to like have little sparks coming out. So I'm very interested in seeing. And to be honest, it's such a Kenny Omega type of match. Kenny Omega being he's wrestling from New Japan for God, like a decade maybe or more. And you know, they're bringing in some of that like Japanese death match things into AEW. So I'm just extremely, I wasn't really going to watch Revolution, to be honest. But now with this exploding barbed wire death match, I think I might have to watch Revolution, because I just want to know what these people are going to do, what spots are going to do. Because John Moxley loves, you know, he loves doing spots. So I can already see John Moxley doing something insane to get a pop from us. And even Ken Omega, I mean, when they did the whole stadium stampede thing and he did his thing off the stadium seats thing to the freaking pool boxes. I mean, God knows what this match is gonna be, and I cannot wait to see this exploding barbed wire death match. As for my highlights of AEW Dynamite, it was literally the Kenny Omega stipulation. Him saying the barbed wire death match. I mean, there's nothing more to be said. It was a straightforward Dynamite show. It was nothing really slowed down, nothing really good. My rating is a 7 out of 10. The flow just kept going straight. Not much surprises really, other than the Kenny Omega stipulation. But hey, I cannot wait for that one. And that would be it for this episode of Reach Wrestling. I hope you guys keep listening. And if you guys want, you can always write to me, comment me, rate me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. You know, I'm always down to have a conversation about wrestling and what could happen or like what will happen. You know, I'm always down to talk. So you can always follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram, Allen Rules Dude, AllanRulesDood. And Twitter at AllenRocks2224. That's Allen, AllanRock, and the number is 2224. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.